Okay. All right. It's Erev Pesach. We have a week to go. Today's subject is the mitzvah of eating matzah. And matzah is a symbolic food. Has deep, 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 you know, root meaning for us, and much of our religion is kind of functions on the concepts that the matzah represents. The matzah and its transition, the eating of matzah on Pesach to the transition 49 days later of the one and only time of the year, Shavuos, that we are commanded to bring leavened bread, bread that has risen, right? Bread full of air on the Mizbeach only once a year on the commemoration of Matan Torah on Shavuos, right? Which is the continuation, or rather I'd say the culmination of Pesach. Shavuos is called Atzeres. It's the final culmination of the process that starts on Pesach. And it's a 49-day process, which is a very symbolic number. And we go from matzah to bread. And that course, you know, that progress is symbolic of really our avoda of our whole lives, our life's work here. Obviously, we're dealing with core ideas when we talk about matzah and eventually the bringing of the bread on the Mizbeach, the transition from matzah to lechem, is obviously a super core idea, because when you get to Shavuos and you bring the lechem on the Mizbeach, the Gemara says, why do you bring Shtei HaLechem on the Mizbeach? Because Shavuos is the Rosh Hashanah for the trees. Now that seems to make no sense at all. If Shavuos is the Rosh Hashanah for the trees, then bring some fruit on the Mizbeach. So Chazal explained, Rashi explains there, that Shavuos is the Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of life, so to speak, for the trees. And here we go. The Eitz Hadas was achita, was wheat. Okay, the Eitz Hadas was wheat. The concept of das and wheat go together. For example, in halacha, a child is not considered to have das until it eats grains, cereal. Okay, once it starts eating grains and cereal, and it said, at that point it says it knows it has the ability to distinguish and say father or mother, which means to say it has the ability to be aware that it exists separately from its father or its mother. It has the beginning of das, of self-awareness. That's associated with chita. Chita and das go together. When a child eats chita, they're considered at being at the stage of having the self-awareness to know that there's others besides them, something outside of them. And on Shavuos, you're allowed to put the wheat in its fully leavened state on the Mizbeach and sacrifice it to God, offer it to God. In other words, it's pure, it's perfect, it's holy. Somehow what we're saying is on Shavuos, the Eitz Hadas, the sin of the Eitz Hadas has been rectified. The value and the benefit of the Eitz Hadas is accessible to us. We can take the wheat, which was the Eitz Hadas, and make it, let it rise into bread and offer it to God as an act of holiness. Somehow Shavuos represents the tikkun on the sin of the Eitz Hadas, right? So we know that if offering two loaves of bread on the Mizbeach means that that there's something holy about bread, the Eitz Hadas is called chita, wheat. Then you go backwards to Pesach, where you're not allowed to do that, and you must eat only unleavened bread. That represents the process prior to the tikkun of the Eitz Hadas. In other words, it represents the dangers that the warning, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, is synonymous with. When Hashem said, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, we were being told the same lesson as eat matzah. Eventually, you can eat from the Eitz Hadas. The Zohar says that their sin was, and we have to understand this on a deeper level, that they ate from the Eitz Hadas before it was ripe. What does that mean? In other words, there is a place for eating from the Eitz Hadas. There is a place for the chita to be allowed to expand into the bread and offered on the altar as a pure offering to Hashem. But not automatically. There's a whole process where you have to wait, and hold back and not, and you're not allowed to eat from the Eitz Hadas. You're not allowed to eat lechem. You're not allowed to eat bread that rises. You have to make sure to eat matzah instead. And this is why Hashem said, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. The Kabbalah says, not yet. Just not yet. So we're creating a parallel here between the process from Pesach to Shavuos. Shavuos being, again, synonymous with eating from the Eitz Hadas properly, and it's allowed, and it's holy, and it's right. But that comes at the end of a process which we call Pesach, eat matzah, and parallel to that where Hashem says, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Not yet. Okay. So first of all, what we're going to do is look into the halachas of matzah to see there's two kind of parallel halachas here. Okay? So first turn to page 350, it's in Perek 12 of Bo. And this is the first time we see really the mitzvah of matzah. Look at Pasuk 8, Ches, talking about Korban Pesach. You should eat the meat on that night, roasted, with matzah and maror. Okay, so that's the first time we hear. Now, these halachas are given to Moshe when? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is way before the miracle that we supposedly are eating matzah because of. Remember at the Seder, you say, why do we eat this matzah? Because our dough didn't rise. This is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We're already told to eat matzah. So clearly, there's a mitzvah of eating matzah way before the nace that it commemorates ever took place, right? That's one aspect. Then you go to Pasuk Tes Zayin, which is on 354. And here comes the specific halachas. On the first day of this yantiv, Mikra Kodesh is be sanctified. And on the seventh day, Mikra Kodesh, in other words, the first and the seventh days in Eretz Yisrael are the Shabbos-like days. The rest are Chol HaMoed days. Kol Malacha Lo Yeh said, no Malacha shall be done. Except anything you need to eat, you're allowed to work, you know, Yantiv, you're allowed to do the Malacha you need for food. Now look at Pasuk Yitzayim. Ushamartem es hamatzos. Now you shall safeguard this mitzvah of the matzos. Be very vigilant with it. Because be'etzem hayom hazeh, in the midst of this day, I have taken you out of Mitzrayim. So guard this day forever. This is a very precious day. And watch the mitzvah of the matzahs that you eat matzah on this day, Pasuk 18, on the Barishon ba'arba asar yom lachodesh, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, eat matzahs, Ad yom ha'echad ve'esrim l'chodesh ba'arv, until the 21st day of the month at night, you should eat matzahs. Shivas yamim, 7 days. There should be no leaven found in your houses. Whoever eats chametz, that there's the sanction is kares. Kol machmetzes lo socheilu, do not eat chametz, only eat matzah. So these are some of the halachas. These are not the totality of the halachas. If you look further in Psukim, if we skip further to Perek Yud Gimel, and of course these halachas are found later in different parshas that discuss the chagim, but Perek Yud Gimel, Psukim 6, 7, and 8, which is on page 362, 7 days you shall eat matzah, right? Shivas yamim tocha matzos, you should eat matzah. There should not be any leavened in any of your borders, right? And you should tell your children, Pasuk Ches, Bavurza, on account of this, pointing the matzah, referring to the matzah, that's what Hashem did great miracles for me when I left Mitzrayim. So these are some of the first halachas we are introduced to regarding the matzah. There is a discussion in halacha, what is the actual obligation of eating matzah, how much and when, and etc. And the answer is the following. The answer is, according to many, according to the Gra, that there is a mitzvah ase doraisa to eat matzah, as we make a bracha al achilas matzah as part of the Seder, on Seder night, the first day of Pesach. In America, we keep the second day as a drabbanon, we do everything the same. That is a mitzvah ase of eating matzah. We make a bracha on it, and it is important to know how precious this mitzvah is because it is the only mitzvah left from all of them. The only mitzvah of eating left from all of them, something that we eat that is kadosh, that's a mitzvah ase to eat. We do not have any more korban pesach. We don't have any of the karbanas. We don't have truma. We don't have meister sheni. Nothing left but matzah. So it's a precious mitzvah. Now, although it's a mitzvah doraisa to eat matzah in during the Seder, as we make the bracha al achilas matzah, in addition to another kazayas, which is hamotzi lechem and aretz, and you must make sure to eat a kazayas, or it's not, it's like you didn't eat it at all, so there's different shitas on what a kazayas is, but make sure you have a valid shita on what a kazayas is, and you don't talk while you're eating it, and you lean on the left side. These are all very important. It's a mitzvah aseh doraisa. It has to be done perfectly. And you eat it without, you know, the maximum is 9 minutes. It's, some people eat it faster. But although it's a mitzvah doraisa to eat matzah Seder night and to eat it correctly and to eat the right amount, the Gra says that it is a reshus. It's voluntary to eat matzah the rest of Pesach. It says you shall eat matzah for 7 days. But every kazayis you eat during the rest of Pesach is its own mitzvah. So what are we saying here? We're saying really that there's an element in the mitzvah of matzah, of yira, and an element of ahava. The yira sachet, is where we have a healthy fear of violating the halacha, and therefore out of yira shamayim, we eat the matzah Seder night to fulfill the mitzvah, because we're obligated, and we have to, and that's why we do it. All the other kazesim we eat, okay, other than the afikomen, which is in place of the Korban Pesach, during the rest of Yontiv, okay, that's our demonstration of our love for the mitzvah of matzah and our interest in eating the matzah because of the mitzvah. And every kazayis we eat, bekavana, out of the love for the mitzvah on the rest of Pesach, is its own mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of avas Hashem, of loving Hashem. So now, what is it about the matzahs that we are supposed to love and be drawn to and want to demonstrate by eating l'shem shamayim a kazayis on Pesach as much as we can, that there's something precious about this mitzvah? So in order to understand the symbolism of the matzah, we start with looking beyond, obviously, the fact that this was the way we start the Seder, halach ma'anya, this is the bread of slavery. That's not really why we're eating the matzah out of love the rest of Pesach. The matzah goes through a transition. It starts with halach ma'anya. This is slave bread. We ate it in Mitzrayim. That's, you know what? That's not the part we're trying to remember, you know, proudly and with fondness, obviously, but it's a necessary part of the process. Then the matzah transitions mid-Seder to the bread of Geula, but it's still matzah. It's still flatbread. And then it transitions at the end of the Seder into the tzafun, into the afikomen, and tzafun means hidden, and that's a symbol for the schar, hidden in the future, that the process of eating matzah, it begins with limitation, akin to a form of slavery that is something we are removed from. It continues in another type of slavery, but it's a mitzvah doraisa, and it's a part of the geula, and it ends in schar, tzafun, that which is hidden for the future. It's this process that we have to think about. And as we said before, for all those latecomers, it is parallel to the process of the story in the beginning of the Torah of the Eitz Hadas. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, because Zohar, the Kabbalah tells us, they ate before it was ripe. There's a proper time to eat from the Eitz Hadas. As we said, this is Shavuos, when you bring the chita, which the Eitz Hadas was, as shtei halechem, two loaves of bread, on the Mizbeach. Okay. The idea of matzah has, we're going to talk about three basic symbols of the matzah. So the Zohar calls it, first, it calls it bread of, the food of refuah, of healing. It's called the bread of emuna, for sure, right? The bread of emuna. And the lack of the air in the matzah is always referred to in machshav. It's a very classic idea. Maharal explains this. Many of the Bali Machshav explain this. The air represents the unbridled, constantly expanding self, egotism of a person, my interpretation and my view. And the matzah is not allowed. In other words, the absence of that. It's not allowed to rise. So it's the bread of humility, it's the bread of emuna, and it's the bread of refuah. Okay. So when we start the Seder, we pick up the matzah and we say, halach ma'anya. This is the bread of slavery. We're going to think about our slavery on different levels all at the same time. There was physical, historical slavery to Paro in Mitzrayim, which we spoke about in depth. Under a state of physical slavery, a person is limited. The human being and all of the human being's potential is reduced, Meitzar, remember? To a cyclical, repetitive, very dull, purposeless existence. That's paro, repetitive, remember? Paro's gematria shana. Of what? Of survival, eating, sleeping, avoiding pain, surviving. That's it. That's the totality of a person's interests, of a person's concerns, and all of their faculties of intelligence and creativity and imagination is all devoted to just trying to get food and trying to survive and trying to avoid pain. That's it. The entire potential of the human being is constrained. That's the reality. The mashal is a human being in embryonic form before they're born, is constrained in a womb. Nothing, they can't really expand or express themselves or have any, nothing has begun to flower yet. They're limited in space. They're limited in possibility. And we were compared to a baby in a womb. And when we were extricated from its trimer, it was the first stages of our birth. Babies in wombs are not yet, able to, they don't have any, there's no self yet being expressed. That's an interesting thing. That's interesting. Never thought of that. That's an interesting thing. Now, I don't know. I have to think if that fits. I have to think if that fits. But it's interesting. I have to think about it because they didn't go through that doorway, you know? It's interesting. In any case, they went through it the next day when they exited. It's interesting. It's very interesting imagery. Okay. Now, a baby in a womb, as we said, is very limited, very constrained. In fact, one of the reasons we put an egg to commemorate the Korban Chagiga, which we can't offer anymore, on the Seder plate, is because an egg is unique. It represents the two-phased birth of the Jewish people. Just like first an egg is laid, extricated from the chicken, then later it hatches. So we were taken out of Mitzrayim. By Har Sinai, we were born in a real way, hatched, so to speak. So there's the symbolism of being constrained. As you know, Kabbalah always is focused on taking realities of the physical world, historical events like Yetzias Mitzrayim, and explaining to us how they exist and operate in our psyche, in ourselves, in our hearts and minds at the same time, and that they're processes we personally go through. That's a lot of what Kabbalah is trying to tell us. That today, often they are telling you that the physical action you're doing, like eating matzah, has a symbolism that's redemptive for the person in their own self, you know, on their own level. So here, the Jewish people also were not yet able to express themselves, they were not able to convey their message to the world, to define themselves in all the variety of what the Jewish people have eventually brought to the world. That all was constrained. That's the lechem oni. Now, when we are slaves, or when we are constrained, or when we are not yet in a position to express ourselves and the infinite potential that we, each one of us, contain within us, that is reflected, that's symbolized by matzah, which is flat. There's no expansion. There's no development. That's the first stage. Everything starts like that. But at a certain point, the Jewish people, each individual, finds themselves free. Free of constraints. In other words, what that means for an individual is that at a certain point after birth, slowly but surely, this is a process, self-awareness starts to dawn in a person. I am an individual. I am not the other. When the babies are very young, they do not differentiate between themselves and their parent. But eventually, they begin to recognize that they exist separately from other people. The first awareness is the other, that there is an other. This is the beginning of the flowering of human consciousness, of self-awareness, and we have spoken here often that what begins to become apparent to a person is the Tzelem Elokim, the God-like qualities that they already know and begin to recognize that exist within them. A human being feels naturally that they want, and we try all our lives to secure for ourselves these feelings, but we intuitively feel God-like qualities, which is, I am the center. I am worthy. We might not say I'm worthy of being worshipped, but I'm worthy. I am one in a million, like Hashem. I'm worthy of being taken into consideration. I'm deeply offended if I am not taken into consideration, if I don't exist. Where do we get these feelings from? Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is Echad, one and only, and worthy of being worshipped, and we kind of feel the same thing about ourselves. And then, because Hashem is eternal, we want to secure for ourselves a feeling of permanence, eternity, comes out in all different ways. People build monuments and leave legacies. And even in this world, we want things, objects that secure for ourselves a sense of permanence, because Hashem is permanent. And as Hashem is perfect, we are sure that our way of interpreting things is the only way, and that we are perfect, and we trust our point of view. And we also know that Hashem controls everything, and so we intuitively want to control. And as Hashem knows everything, we are totally curious about everything. We want to understand. And a person begins to recognize these natural forces governing, you know, driving them. In addition to that, here's what happens. Person recognizes at some point that we have been given an intellect which is way disproportionate to our needs for survival. Like, an animal has an intellect which is proportionate to what they need to know in order to survive. So their intellect is that, just, and by the way, the smartest animals, like a two-year-old, okay, maybe a little more, they don't have abstract thinking as we do, and they don't have the problem-solving issues in terms only beyond instinct that we do, abstract ideas. They have the sufficient intelligence they need to ensure their survival. And some of the intelligent forms of intelligence are, for us, astonishing. Bees, the way they move around and buzz around a circle, they're actually drawing a map for other bees to find this flower and all kinds of amazing stuff. But as we know, these are instinctual things, and they have what they need to survive. It speaks more of the genius of Hashem than the genius of the animal. But the human being is endowed with a mind that has the capacity to and wants to explore arenas that have absolutely nothing to do with our survival. Well, look what man has done so far in physics, in biology, and understanding anatomy, the human body, in sciences, in technology. We are so curious. We don't just want to know how to get food and clothing. We want to know the purpose of the world and the secrets of the world. And we have this enormous intellect, and we're driven. It drives us to explore, to find out. We recognize that. We also recognize something else. We recognize that we, as we look around the world and as we come into ourselves, we experience things. And we spoke about this last time. We experience things with our senses. And it is very possible to experience something, and because of my unique combination of personality, experiences, education, background, I experience an event and I interpret it based on my imagination a particular way, where someone else will experience it and interpret it a different way. So we realize that we have senses that tell us and give us, you know, kind of help us explain the world. And that, coupled with an imagination and a fantasy world, right, dimyon, we come up with all kinds of explanations for life and base our reactions on those explanations that we've given ourselves and base our choices on that. Now, the idea is this. When a person finds themselves free, there's a lot of ways to kind of explain the world around them. There's the rational way, which is based on the truth, the facts, which take thinking about, exploring, and we learn quickly that it's a big mistake to think that what I see and what I hear and what I feel are the true explanations of what's happening. There's optical illusions. We see a piece of cake that looks to our senses and smells delicious, right? It's full of poison, which it mostly is, right? And yet our imagination tells us that we want it, it's delicious, it's enjoyable. Okay, so eating all those processed foods full of chemicals, okay, that's irrational, and it's known to be irrational because it causes all kinds of diseases and it destroys a person slowly but surely, but it's irrelevant that it's irrational because we have a huge temptation to tell ourselves through our imagination that it's good and it's delicious and it's enjoyable. This sounds like the Eitz HaDaas, right? It's exactly the same thing. When you look at the Eitz HaDaas, she sees how beautiful it is. And the only thing that is not involved is smell. We talked about that, right? And she hears the nachash. And she imagines the taste and the benefit. It's all perceiving the world through our senses and then having our imagination kick in to explain what we're seeing. Now, unlike truths, which are specific and absolute and very limited, they're either yes or no, usur or mutter, prohibited or forbid or allowed. They're either sheker or emes. They're either in line with Hashem's will or out of line. And we have so many halachas, both in character, both ben adam l'chaveru and ben adam l'makom, between man and God, that it's knowable what to do with every particular situation, pretty much. Of course, there are the complicated ones, but in many situations, there's a guideline, right? The truth, the emes and sheker is knowable, but in dimyon, fantasy and imagination is completely unlimited. Everything is possible. Okay. So once a person is out of Mitzrayim, they've come out of Mitzrayim, they're in the process of the Exodus. In other words, a human being, our nation, develops a sense of self-awareness. I exist and I can face this world and I can interpret this world. Primarily my instinct is through my senses, my imagination. The right way is through my intellect. Okay? But the natural temptation is, because it's visceral and it's urgent and it's tangible, is to go via the senses and via the imagination. And that's the warning, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. The warning is, it's same as saying, eat matzah, is saying the Eitz Hadas, well, actually, let's start like this. Everybody asks a basic philosophical question. If it's the Eitz Hadas that gave them the ability to choose between good and bad, what capacity did they use to choose to eat from the Eitz Hadas? If they didn't have the capacity to choose between good and bad, so what went on in their heads that allowed them to choose to do something that was bad, right? That's the question, a very basic question. So Rambam, who goes through all of this systematically in the Morning of Ruchim, explains that they could conceive of the possibility of living in a world of subjective reality, sensual interpretations of the world, imaginative interpretations of the world, but they had no desire to do that. So what does that mean? We go through this all the time, and we do it great with other people. We could conceive of a person being totally irrational, but we, in many cases, have no interest in being irrational because we know the consequences are not worth it. We don't even want to be irrational in this particular situation. For example, classic, you're standing at the edge of the Empire State Building. You have no interest in being irrational in your imagination thing, but you can jump because you can fly. Try it. Like, we are not interested in imagining possibilities that defy the reality. It's not a temptation. And when we see other people, they speak to us about an emotionally charged situation, and we say to them, "You're being so irrational. That's not what happened. That's not what she meant. That is not what happened over here. You're misinterpreting the whole thing because you think da 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 da, or you want da da da." So you're, and we see when other people are being irrational, and it's so obvious to us, and we like don't know why. You like just snap out of it. You're going to make a big mistake. But to the person who's in that state, they love being irrational. It's fulfilling this sensual need to be angry, to be sad, to be crazy, and you know they want to misrespond to this situation. They don't confuse me with the facts. This is what I know, and I've seen people who they're hard of hearing, and they don't admit that they can't hear so well anymore. And then they hear somebody say something, they think they said something else, and they're angry, and you can't talk them out of it. So what is that? We love being irrational. It feels good. It's liberating. It's because, you know what? We can do whatever. We can respond any way we want to. We can imagine anything we want to. This is a temptation. Now, that's what Hashem says. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, which means don't allow yourself, okay, to don't encourage in yourself and develop a great addiction to being irrational. So prior to eating, in other words, a human being, because we said the Eitz Hadas story is not a story of two random people in the past who sinned and now we're all suffering. It's the instructions to every single person about how to order our own lives and know what's going on in our own heads. It's psychology 101, first couple prakim of the Torah, basic human psychology. The Torah is telling us, you know that you can, when you're in an objective place, you see how crazy it is to be irrational. But you let yourself get into a situation where you yourself become irrational. And you allow it to happen. That's called eating from the Eitz Hadas. Eating, in other words, seeing that, you know, imagining how good it is when it's usser, when it's forbidden, when it's not true, it's not good, and it's not life-giving, it's death-giving. It's death, right? It brings you closer to death. You ultimately die on many levels when you become totally consumed with your own interpretations and your own imagination, right? It takes you away from truth. And yet, the temptation to have the freedom of interpreting the whole world my way is such a huge temptation. It's so freeing. So in our minds, we think it's freeing. It leads to destruction because we make huge mistakes. Okay. So we said that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, during the process of the Makos and Makos Bechoros, and the great night of, you know, of Hashem revealing Himself in Mitzrayim, that whole night of the Geula and the next morning till the Yetziah, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing in this whole year-long process was He was showing the world, and Klal Yisrael primarily, the truth that must govern our thinking and our arrangement of our life. In other words, if Hashem demonstrated, as we said many times already, what Rambam eventually calls the Ikrim, things you must know, right? This sounds familiar? We spoke about this a little bit. You must know that there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem has a particular interest in human being, and it's been revealed through Nevuah and in the Torah to people. And Hashem is watching, and Hashem cares, and He's expecting you. So there's an obligation to know what the truths are and to conduct our lives accordingly, and that is called being rational. It's not okay to ignore all the truths that are revealed and recorded and at our fingertips, and act as if we are the source of the truth and make up our own explanations for everything and therefore legitimize everything. And there's no end to what we can do with that. Now, what we're saying is the matzah, they say they ate from the Eitz Hadas before it was ripe. All right, we have to eat matzah 7 days of Pesach. And the more we eat matzah, the greater, it's a great mitzvah. It's a reshus, it's out voluntary, but each kezayis is a mitzvah. Because it's part of the process of getting to Shavuos where we are allowed to eat the bread. Put the bread on the Mizbeach. Okay. By the way, this just reminded me, by the Muranos, we once ended up with a Murano friend in when we lived in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and they had a minhag where they ate, they and I think the Christians do this too, right? They, in Lent or something, they don't eat leaven for a whole bunch of weeks, basically between Easter, Pesach, and whatever comes after that. They had a long process of not eating bread, which is interesting. But we go back to bread after... What is it? What was it? Not eating meat. No, there was one?
No, it's just giving up something.
Oh. This Murano had a tradition. They didn't eat leavened bread for a few weeks. Anyway, the point here is this. The Maharal explains this. Maharal explains the following. That when a person becomes aware of the potential within them, okay, they are in danger at that moment of freedom, of birth, of self-awareness. The first danger that has to be recognized is that what could happen is the person begins to approach the world from the standpoint of what's immediate, what's tangible, which is their senses, and their interpretations of what, you know, according to their imagination. And that inflates a person and never stops inflating a person because there's no standards, there's no limitations, and anything is possible. In other words, a person has to know at the moment of the potential being, you know, set free, the first thing they need to do is contain, control, humble themselves, their natural tendency to be the source of the definition of all things, hold themselves back for a period of time, a process whereby what are they doing in that time? When the Jews came out of Mitzrayim, they went into the Midbar. There in the Midbar, they lived Alpinisim, according to miracles, which means they ate the man from heaven, they drank the water from the Be'er, they were surrounded by Anani HaKavo, till they got to Har Sinai, there was a period, and they were supposed to go from Har Sinai right into Israel. So this was supposed to be the period. There was supposed to be this period of time where they were infused with the truth, with the clarity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, and Hashem sustaining them, and Hashem's will being expressed through themselves, and not get caught up in their own interpretation of things, but they were supposed to go through a process, which is really the process of our whole lives, where we hold back our own, you know, desire to be this, you know, to, like the Nachash said, to be God and interpret all things and define all things, and therefore everything's right because it's according to me and I'm right. To hold that back and allow ourselves to be educated with the truths that permeate our existence. And once that process has taken place, then we are safe. Then we can eat from the Eitz Hadas. Or, since Eitz Hadas is a chita, we can bring lechem, bread that has risen, on the Mizbeach. Because once a person is secure, has secured for themselves real commitment to the true, you know, ordering of their life, which is based on the mitzvahs, then the imagination and the senses have a very, very, very important role to play. All chedushim. Every person on earth is capable of coming up with their own chedushim in Torah, either in learning, or in chesed, or in every area of human endeavor, a person can bring a new novel idea to anything, to science, to math, to business, to art of all sorts. Something new, and if it's under the framework of true Yirat Shamayim, then it will enhance, add a dimension to, it will increase, it'll add another facet to all of humanity's appreciation of Hashem, and the Hashem's interest and Hashem's purpose in this world. Anything can be used in a novel way, and it takes imagination. So imagination is safe once it's gone through the process of being limited. When we learn the truth, we secure for ourselves the real, rational, understandings that have been revealed to us. Then you can eat from Eitz HaDaas. Then you can be subjective, see things your way, use your imagination. Let the bread rise, put it on the Mizbeach, it's holy. The problem is that in the historical story, it was supposed to be, 49 days from Yetzias Mitzrayim to Shavuos. But what this symbolizes is an entire life. Basically, we never really get to Shavuos in our lives. We really never get to a place where we're completely free to let our imagination and our chedushim run wild without constantly stepping back and eating the so-called matzah one more time, saying, wait a second. Is this me, or is this within the framework of the emes? My grandfather used to say, every once in a while, more often than not, you have to step back and reevaluate. Is your l'shem shamayim still l'shem shamayim? Because it's so easy for us to express ourselves l'shem shamayim, and then it veers off, and it's just ourselves, and we're just using the religious framework as a good koshering device so that it doesn't look like it's ourselves and our ego at play. It's really the Torah and the learning and this and that and the mitzvah that's at play. I want to say one more thing, then we're going to take comments. I will. It's not as long as usual, so we'll have time for comments or questions. You know the difference between chametz and matzah. They both have a mem, they both have a tzadi. The difference is in the ches and the hay. This is a nice Kabbalistic idea, you might have heard it. The ches is, other than the bottom, it has three, it's two legs and a roof, right, like the doorpost, and it's totally sealed. The hay is the same, except there's a little break, right, on the left leg between the roof and the leg, there's a little space. Now, imagine this. Think about, yeast or leaven in bread, the bread rising. Think about the ches, okay? The ego of a person, the nachash it's called, right, they're coupled with the Isha, for those that know the Eitz HaDaas lingo here. The natural tendency of a person to be the center, the God, the one who interprets and defines everything, right? Who's willing to and happy to interpret what they see and hear their own way without looking to the truth behind it. What happens is that, imagine the Ches coming up from the bottom, is what we call the Yetzer Hara, or the ego, or the imagination, the fantasy, and it expands and expands and expands and expands. And what eventually happens? It's got to explode. So and it does explode in people, obviously. What's the tikkun? What's the safety net? The hay of matzah. Matzah also, the human being, it's natural, has in a tendency, it's how we are, it's called, we are all in this place. As soon as we become aware of ourselves, this starts to happen. We start to perceive the world, first and foremost, by our senses, because it's easier, it's immediate. It takes time to hold ourselves back and ask the question of what's the truth, what's the real explanation, and then study it, and then understand it, and then apply it. It's a whole different, so that's a process of abstract thinking, of, patience, of long-term, of thinking about the long-term, about the more things that are remote, that are, that come through the cognitive part of the mind. So it becomes natural for the ego to bubble up in a person, my tendency to, react according to how I feel and what things seem to me. As long as there's that little break, okay, that little space for where that can escape. In other words, it's a tendency, it starts, but I let it escape, I give it a way out. It doesn't begin to kind of fill me to such a degree that I'm helpless and eventually destroy me. It has an escape hatch. What's the escape hatch? The escape hatch is the matzah, the humility that says, wait, before I look at the situation my way, let me take a step back and see what it is the true way, according to the Torah, according to the Mitzvahs, according to the Hadracha, the guidance of so many great righteous people before me who thought this through and had these issues and understood more than me and you know, left a legacy how we're supposed to behave. So the matzah has that escape hatch. In other words, it's not possible to eat matzah every day of your life for the rest of your life. In other words, it's not possible to live in a state where there's no self expressing itself in terms of my imagination, my interpretation, my way of seeing things, what it appears like to me, my point of view, how I feel about things. There is no way to not eat matzah. I mean, to eat matzah every day of your life and be pure like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't create us like that. He created us with a dynamic and a conflict all the time. The tendency is to expand, and we're allowed to eat bread. But the obligation is to always go back to the concept of matzah and take it down a notch and remember that before we are free, we have to be we have to go through process of chinuch, of what's, and that's why chinuch is so, so important. That's why the Kabbalah says. It's the bread of Amuna. Not just, of course, Amuna that Hashem is going to save Klal Yisrael, and Hashem saved Klal Yisrael and redeemed us. But on a personal level, it's Emunah that if I just hold back, restrain myself, humility, right, for a moment, if I just don't, if I, you know, don't allow myself here to be the central actor, I have Emunah that I can, I will get, I personally will get to a point where I can become a rational human being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taught us the truth, and I trust Hashem's truths, and I want to hear them. I want to learn them. I'm like a student. I'm like a child, and I trust that I'm being taught what's right. And I like the fact that I have a, you know, an opportunity to be taught before I'm, you know, free to make, God forbid, you know, my own mistakes. So it's an emunah in the process of the chinuch, just like the Jews in the Midbar had to have tremendous emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu because they were in a desert. There's no food, no water, no nothing. So this is bread of emunah. We have emunah that Hashem is going to teach us. Hashem is going to show us. We just have to learn, fill our minds with the, what we've been, what's, you know, what Hashem has given us, and it will affect us. We'll become rational human beings. We'll be able to always be rational or as much as possible. And then it's called the bread of refuah. That's clear. It's healing. It heals us. What does it heal us from? Our ultimate flaw, which is imagination. Our ego, you know, the megalomania that exists in every person's mind and heart, that they have a right to, you know, have their own point of view on every single subject, and it's always right. That's the refuah. There needs to be a refuah from that. So when we eat matzah, the kavana is, and it's, as we said, mitzvah d'oraisa, and it's the only one left, and it has a specific shear of how much, you have to know it, and the time, and no hefzik, and no talking, and leaning, because it's geula. We have the kavana we have in our head, the tefillah, and by the way, in Kabbalah, it's compared to shofar. On Rosh Hashanah, it's a whole other thing. But the tefillah, because shofar is also a tefillah. In Rosh Hashanah, we're davening, right? To accept Hashem's malchus, right? So the tefillah in our minds, the kavana in our heads when we're eating matzah is, just like we physically eat this bread, which is has no air in it, okay? No leaven. It hasn't risen at all. It's humble. Okay, so we're eating it. This act of eating it actually physically, sensually, we're experiencing this with our senses, our taste, right? Our mouths, we're feeling the texture of the flat matzah. In other words, the senses experience this concept of humility, of patience, of holding back, of allowing the truths that have been revealed to kind of like become, you know, for us, you know, standards that become automatic for us because they're real to us, and we allow ourselves to, you know, be it. Our kavana is that we should merit, we should be zocha to always maintaining, having the clarity of mind to maintain that perspective, because as soon as, you know, life gets back to normal, it's you lose it so fast. And that's why we said the gross is every kazayas you eat on Pesach out of love for the mitzvah of matzah is a special mitzvah in and of itself, because it means we want to do this. Okay, take some questions. 1 second. You were first, yeah, before.
Can you use the same formula, basically, of humility going up to a little bit of gaiva after we, you know, at Gata Harsinai. For the other korbanos, like the nazir who brings one and one, matzah and challah and korban todah, I don't know all the other korbanos.
I haven't thought through or start, you know, seen the exact parallels. But whenever you're dealing with matzah and lechem, you're dealing with these ideas. One second, yeah.
What troubled me is, if you're talking about the peelings of matzah, why would you culminate in the lechem, which has a way of decay? I always believe that the matzah was so pure, it doesn't decay, which is how we decay because for whatever happened or whatever. Now, why would the culmination be the rising of the bread, which leads to that?
Because I guess you're asking a question that one of the things we say about matzah is that because it doesn't rise and it's not fresh, it's not a dynamic thing anymore in a way. Time doesn't affect it as much. Time doesn't affect it, whereas bread is affected by time. It rises and rises. Well, the truth is, you're getting into an idea that Shavuos, which is the rising of the bread, which is the tikkun of the Eitz Hadas, which is the free-flowing human, you know, individuality coming to express itself in the framework of the Beis HaMikdash, on HaMizbeach, correctly. When you get to that point, which is, we said Shavuos is like, is Matan Torah, you're getting to a point, like we said, because we don't ever really get in our lives to that place. Shavuos Matan Torah was such clarity, such a revelation of truth, that said there was no more, the venom of the snake was neutralized, which means there was no more flaw of the Eitz Hadas. People were free to express themselves. That existence is really Olam Haba, ultimately. There's no danger once you're already in that realm. So the truth is, all of our lives is getting more and more in certain areas of our personality, in certain areas of our avoda. But we never really, you know, life is a process. Here we do the work. There is the schar, the tzafon is there. We never get to a point where we are, so to speak, putting the lechem on the mizbeach and we're free for the rest of our lives. We never got to think about it again. We never got to eat matzah again. We are totally, perfectly arranged. That's what we talk about as the schar. That's not really here. We're always cautious. Sharon, yeah. Oh, the Gemara says that Shavuos is Rosh Hashanah for the trees. That's why you bring two loaves of bread. And Rashi explains, because the Eitz Hadas was wheat. Now, we spoke about this once in the past on Shavuos, not for now, that what that means, I'll mention it, but it's not for now. Wheat originally was a tree, which means every year it grew again. But now wheat is something that has to be cultivated every single year from scratch. That has all kinds of connotations. So it's all metaphorical. It's all metaphorical. But Rashi says the metaphor for the Eitz Hadas is wheat. Yes. Oh, I forgot to do the envelope. Oh, one second. I always pass around an envelope before Pesach. I did.